Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 14, the topic for discussion. I am your fearless leader and host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man who really needs no introduction, but we give him one anyways, the one, the only Payne Insider. What's going on, my good man?
Not too much. What are you up to? It's a little chilly here again.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you guys have been going through a bit of a cold spell down there. I want to make sure you got your down comforter out, you have your winter jacket, maybe some snow pants. I mean, 55 this time of year is no joke down there in South Florida.
Yeah, I was almost jinxed myself. I was talking to you and Mason a few weeks back about not getting sick, and I've kind of been fighting it a little bit. This weather change is doing no favors.
Do you want to give out your remedy to try and avoid illness, whether it's actually medically proven or it's something you believe in a placebo effect?
Zicam seems to work wonders, and I'm sure that a lot of people listening will send me emails and tell me how bad it is for you and yada, yada, yada. But it seems to work. I've had good success with it. Even nights where, you know, I know I'm only getting a couple hours of sleep, that seems to be good. But obviously liquid. And then Tuesday, what night was it? Maybe it was Monday night? Monday night, we both got to sleep in a little bit, it sounds like.
I mean, you try and collect hours of sleep anywhere you can this time of year. I mean, I think we both mentioned it, and I know our listeners probably don't give a shit one way or the other, but we'll share either way. You know, sometimes when you get that Wednesday off without the college football podcast, it's almost like you get an hour or two where you get that collective sigh, and you're not scrambling to try and continue to produce content, research, and make sure we can bring some of the best analysis in the industry out there to our listeners.
Oh, it was Wednesday was awesome. Like, not having that show Wednesday was awesome. I slept in. I got to tell you, first time in so long that I slept in Tuesday. Didn't even set the alarm. I responded to your first text at about 10 a.m., and that is when
I
woke
up. I figured you were waking up for lunch. You'd been running around all morning. I had no idea it was the first thing you'd actually done when rolling out of bed that morning.
No, it was like, it wasn't the summer of George, but it was like the day of George. Got a facial, got a haircut, worked out. It was like a normal human life I had on Tuesday.
Hey, sometimes you got to take advantage. We know this gets to be a grind, and of course, hey, it's been a frustrating few weeks, but we'll get this ship right where it needs to go. And you know what? Rather than trying to exchange any more pleasantries, why don't we get right into some of the biggest games of the weekend, Payne? I know we have five up for debate, and actually some pretty intriguing matchups, of course. We'll get to the Thursday night football game before we close up shop, and naturally we have Dave Mason that'll join us a little bit later in the show. But the first game takes us to Arrowhead Stadium, where it's Kansas City, a 6.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 53 right now, trending under. This game will feature the number one scoring offense in the league, the Kansas City Chiefs, against the number one scoring defense in the Baltimore Ravens. Chiefs coming in averaging 37 points per game, the Ravens a hair under 18 defensively. Top scoring defense has not met the top scoring offense four times in the last five seasons, week 10 or later. The defense has prevailed. But you know, Payne, you and I have mentioned Lamar Jackson and some of his inability to force defenses to respect the Ravens passing game. Last week and kind of opened my eyes a little bit, mainly because the Ravens continue to run the football and do it with so much success.
You know, it was interesting coming out of Baltimore this week. Harbaugh was like, hey, we have an unconventional offense right now, and we're not sure where
we can't throw the downward pass.
You know, it was pretty funny to listen to him. And, you know, he effectively said, you know, we have an unconventional offense. We're not sure where it's going or what it's going to look like in the future. But you know what? Neither do our opponents. And I thought that was pretty funny. And listen, like Joe Flacco is back at practice on a limited basis. He was there all last week. He's been limited this week. Harbaugh claims like they want to just ramp things up with him and he's going to get more work this week. you know, it's crystal clear at this point, like the Ravens are smartly wanting the Chiefs to have to spend time preparing for both Flacco and Jackson. It's going to be Jackson. I think it would have to be, right? Especially when you look at this matchup in the style. I think it's better suited for Lamar to start. Like, Flacco or Jackson, like, neither of them are going to bring you back in a shootout, I wouldn't think. But your best effort here is to run the ball. Keep the Chiefs' offense on the sidelines. Have your defense rested for when they are on the field. You mentioned the Chiefs' offensive numbers. Number one in overall efficiency. They have the most explosive plays in the NFL with 89 as well. So, you know, to me, I think it's Lamar. It's Gus Edwards. Can they have success on the ground? I think that's the ultimate determinant here. And I don't think this is anything new. We're not going to tell people that hasn't, you know, we've said this all year. The best part of the Chiefs defense is their secondary, but they cannot stop the run. Like, it's ugly. You look at some of these metrics, KC, they allow 5.1 yards per rush attempt. That's dead last in the NFL. KC allows 59% of runs to grade successful. That's dead last in the NFL and 11% below the league average. Chiefs are also 30th in explosive run defense. Like, there isn't a part of this Chiefs defense that defends the run. They don't defend any part of the field. There's just not that. I was looking at this. I was trying to, like, paint a picture here because I was thinking in my head initially when we were going to talk about this game. I said, you know, option offense, Andy Reid, you know, has a little bit of college offense in his game. Can maybe he – it's ugly. Like, the Chiefs are below average in rushing success rate to every area of the field, right? You look – over outside left, over the left tackle, over the left guard, center, right guard, right tackle, or outside right, it doesn't matter. Like, they are horrific stopping the run, and especially on outside runs. And then when you kind of look at what you need to stop an option offensive attack, you need good linebackers that can kind of read and react. And the Chiefs don't have competent linebackers on the roster. It's Hitchens and Ragland. They've been terrible. So, this, for me, is really funny, right? And I think we touched on this a little bit last week. We have Baltimore, over 8 wins. Like, we're Lamar Jackson fans right now at this point. This is a perfect. This is, like, perfect, right? Like, if you could handpick the 4 best opponents for Lamar Jackson to face this season in his 4 starts, he's faced them all, right? You look at the, like, defensive efficiency metrics of the teams Lamar Jackson's faced. It was number 32 Atlanta, number 31 Oakland, number 28 Cincinnati. And here you go. This is a tough one this week. Number 26 Kansas City. And you look at those 4 defenses in terms of success rate run defense. It's number 32 Kansas City, number 31 Atlanta, number 30 Cincy, and number 28 Oakland. Like, this is absolutely nuts to me, Todd.
I mean, trust me, it had to factor into the decision-making process, knowing that Flacco was a little bit nicked up. We're still, I mean, at least I am unsure of exactly how serious the injury really was. The schedule opened up perfectly for Lamar to get his feet under him. And you mentioned, since week 11, the Ravens Payne averaging 48 rushing attempts per game, tops in the league. Rushing yards per game, 238.7. That's number one in the league. Time of possession has been the big factor. They're possessing the football for over 37 minutes per game. First in the league, and the Chiefs' losses have come when they've been on the short end of the stick in terms of time of possession. Last weekend, I had to double check this because I didn't feel it was right, because we had talked about the Giants and Eagles and how few plays the Giants ran in the second half when the Eagles came back. The Falcons ran 13 plays the entire second half last week when the Ravens went on the road and got that victory. I mean, do you think going into Arrowhead and hostile territory, we're going to see this offense slow down a bit, or it's going to be rinse and repeat and they're going to have the same success given a lot of the defensive metrics that you mentioned that have played Kansas City all season long?
Interesting question, and it's a good one. Wasn't sure I was going to divulge it, but it's a good one. So Baltimore is playing significantly slower now as well since this switch. And so, here's the thing. With the total, it's pretty correlated, right? If you like Baltimore, you're going to be looking under here. And I know there was an opener of 49. If you can read a market, what it's telling you was when that opened 49, that was the mindset of probably one or two odds makers where they would have made this. And then what ended up happening was, probably without taking a bet, because you can read the timestamps. They removed the game off the board because everyone else opened 53 and a half, 53, and then they kind of mirrored that. But it gives you an idea of what one odds maker thinks of this game. So that's interesting to me. You know, potentially Lamar has, he's not going to throw like, you know, he's not going to have a big throwing game here. But he could potentially, there could be some opportunities for him to have some passing attempts, right? You'd think to the tight end, that's one of those big targets for Lamar. It's smack dab in the middle of his face, so there's not much reading there. And so if you look at how the Chiefs defend tight ends, they've given up a league high 913 yards and the fifth most touchdowns with seven to the tight end position. So potentially when Lamar does throw off the read options, off the RPO, off that stuff, he could have some success potentially throwing down the middle of the field there. But it'll be also be interesting just to monitor the Eric Berry situation here defensively as well. He's practiced this week. He was limited practice all last week. If he could return, I think that's a big boost for the Chiefs defense.
Hey, one thing on the other side, I mean, we've talked about how this Ravens offense is going to look against the much maligned Chiefs defense, but Kansas City's strength is clearly what they can do from an offensive standpoint. The Ravens' strength is on the defensive side of the ball there. No Kareem Hunt, and I'm not going to get into what he did off the field or any of that stuff, only worried about on-field productivity. How much of this offense lose without Kareem Hunt as far as having that balance? Because West and Ware, for me, don't provide any of that explosive big play potential or the dynamic of being a run-pass threat that Kareem Hunt had brought to the table for Patrick Mahomes.
This is the interesting topic of the week, and it seems to kind of get people heated, right? Depending on how you value positions and not necessarily players, it's probably going to how you're going to gauge this drop-off, right? And I think it's easy to discuss it numerically, right? Like every better odds makers you'll hear this week will say, hey, you know, it's probably worth half a point or a full point. I know one site that provides, you know, most NFL teams data had Kareem Hunt as the 113th most valuable player in the NFL. And so, you know, again, I think that's more about devaluing the running back position as opposed to factoring in how good Kareem Hunt is. And personally, I think it's a bigger loss, right? Like, not just as a runner when the weather starts to get cold, right? He catches balls out of the backfield. And that screen and short pass game is like this integral part of what Andy Reid's system is. And you nailed it, right? This past week, Spencer Ware wasn't very good. And it was against a poor, poor Oakland run defense. He had 3.4 yards a carry, 36% of his runs graded successful. That's why Andy Reid went to, Charkandrick West this week and picked him up off the streets. Maybe it's more Damian Williams, right? He's a special teams ace. He's the former Dolphins backup running back. Maybe he sees a little more burn in the Chiefs backfield. He can catch it. He can run it. He had five carries against Oakland. Four of them were successful, averaged 7.6 a run. I think he's probably a little better out of the backfield. I think it's interesting, too, because Ware hasn't had like this massive workload. So maybe it'll take time for him to get going. This is a different test, though, I think, for the Chiefs offense. We saw them struggle a little bit recently. You look at some of the defenses that play the similar style to what the Ravens defense does, or just better defenses in general, right? You had the Jags hold the Chiefs to almost a yard below their season-long average. Denver has done a very good job against the Chiefs. I know what the scoreboard looks like, but if you look at success rates, if you look at yards per play, Denver did a good job in Week 8 at Arrowhead. Arizona, off the bye, held KC to over a yard per play below their season average. So it'll be interesting to see what this looks like. And you mentioned a very good point here about that time of possession and how many plays Atlanta had last week. This Ravens defense is going to be, I would think, extremely well-rested, right? If you look at the last 4 weeks for this Ravens defense, they had a bye week 4 weeks ago, and then they had 25 minutes on the field against Oakland, 21 minutes on the field against Cincy, and last week, 20 minutes on the field against Atlanta. So they are fresh as a daisy, I would think. And they potentially, again, we know no Kareem Hunt. Sammy Watkins is a limited participant in practice. I'm hearing they want to make sure he's 100% this time to return. So I don't know if he plays this week either. So now you're suddenly down two of your best four key cogs on offense, and it's going to present a tougher challenge for Patty Mahomes. The one spot, though, to focus on this week is the Ravens do allow 72% of completions to the tight end, so Kelsey could have a big day here.
Should be a great game and one that'll go a long way in terms of determining what we may see at the bottom of the AFC playoff picture is the Ravens trying to keep themselves relevant. The Chiefs, of course, a short week looming as well. A home date against the Chargers that could be for the division should the Chiefs get upset on Sunday. The Houston Texans, Payne, they have a chance to close things out with a little bit of help this coming Sunday should the result on Thursday night go their way. It's the Texans, a 4.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 49.5, as the Texans go for their 10th straight win. First time in NFL history a team has won 9 straight after starting 0-3. What jumped off the page to me, though, is that these are the top two scoring defenses in the NFL since Week 7, both allowing less than 17 points per game. Luck hasn't beaten the Texans since 2014. Now it's a limited sample size of 3 games. But I ask you, can the Colts, who have shown some frailties each of the last 2 weeks in a win against the Dolphins and getting shut out for the first time in Luck's career, bounce back against a Texans side that seems to be clicking on all cylinders?
We don't do a lot of talking before the show for our listeners who kind of try to envision what goes into the sauce over here. And so you actually pitched that perfectly because you mentioned... it sounded like two defenses that were trending up. And yet we've seen this market took a little dummy money under and then proceeded to get buried over 48.5. It was a shocking performance from the Colts offense last week. Andrew Luck was shut out for the first time in his career. And it's tough to spin it positively, right? Because you look at the yards per play data, Colts had 3.7 yards per play. But it felt like if you watched it, it was a different vibe. It could have swung differently at the beginning, early on. Luck throws the pick inside the Jags 20 on the first possession. Colts punt on 4th and 1 at midfield. They get stopped on 4th and goal from the 2. And we just know that's a Jaguars defense that likes to play with energy and emotion. So you get all 3 of those gigantic swing plays to go your way. And you get like this front-running, chatty defense that's now engaged the rest of the way. We'd kind of been praising the Colts offensive line for how good they've been this season. Last week was by far their worst performance of the season. 2.9 yards a rush. Andrew Luck was pressured 23 times. Anthony Costanzo was bad. Like, bad, bad. Allowed 8 pressures and 3 hits on the quarterback, just himself. I think the backup center, from what I've seen, and I'm going to butcher his name, Evan Boehm, he's played pretty well, but he's not Ryan Kelly. So that's an injury to monitor here as we get closer to kickoff this weekend. Kelly has that MCL sprain. Usually takes 2 to 4 weeks to heal. So Sunday's game would kind of mark recovery day 21 for Ryan Kelly. So I think that's something to look at. This is pretty easy for me. I think the Colts offense trends up. And we've talked about the Texans defense and how they've had some phony performances recently. I think we talked about this when Houston and Tennessee played a few weeks back. I wasn't buying Houston's 4th place ranking in defensive efficiency. They've now dropped down to 6th. And again, on the season, Houston's defense has played the 2nd easiest schedule of offenses. Last week against the Browns, right? Scoreboard looks great. Held Cleveland to 13. Yippee. Woohoo. Reality is Cleveland went up and down the field. 8.2 yards per play for that Cleveland offense. And in addition to the 13 points, the Browns had 5 other possessions that made it into Houston territory. And those 5 possessions combined for 0 points. You roll it back to the Titans game. Scoreboard says 17. You effectively had a turnover inside the 5 when Vrabel decides to hand it to a tight end on 4th and 1. But Mariota was 22 for 23 that game. I still think the Texans defense is a hair overrated. I think this Colts offense is going to have opportunities, especially if their offensive line can get back into form. I think the Jags' performance was that one game anomaly. The Texans can't defend tight ends. Wouldn't be shocked to see Eric Ebron have another nice day here. I don't think the Texans secondary has a chance of defending T.Y. Hilton here either. A couple of those guys are banged up in that Texans secondary as well. So I think we could see some points here.
When you look at the other side of the ball in terms of how the Colts defense can expect to defend the Houston Texans, we've seen Lamar Miller start to go bonkers, 100-plus yards in 4 out of his last 6 games. I mean, the Texans' ground game churning out 170-plus since Week 7, and actually Lamar Miller leads the league in rushing since then.
Wow.
You talked about the noise and the defensive numbers for the Texans. Seems to be plenty of noise in the defensive numbers for the Colts that should lead to some success for what Houston wants to do, getting the ball to DeAndre Hopkins and running the football successfully.
You mean facing Blaine Gabbert and Ryan Tannehill with an AC joint issue in his throwing shoulder and check down Cody Kessler? doesn't leave you brimming with confidence for this Colts
defense.
I mean,
details that you're going to get into taking pot shots at some of the league's inferior quarterbacks over there.
I like the way the Texans offense is trending right now, especially the last three games since the bye. To me, it's all about Deshaun Watson. It's the healthiest he's been all season. He's back to using his legs more. 16 rush attempts the last two games, and I think that's huge. He's completing 75% of his passes during that time frame as well. So this is the time of year you really want to pay attention to how offenses and defenses are trending, right? And I think this Texans offense is really trending up with one specific area, and you touched on it perfectly. It's the ground game. They're finally getting some balance. Lamar Miller has gone for 85 yards or more in 5 of 6 games. Over that 6-game sample, he's averaging about a hair under 6 yards per run. When you kind of look at how this team's trending, weeks 1 through 9 for Houston, 26th in rushing success rate. Last 4 weeks, Houston's in the top 10. So it's that combination of Watson using his legs more, Lamar Miller getting going. And when you have to prepare for that mobile element of Watson, the defense has to focus their attention there. It means they're not focusing their attention in other areas. And I think Lamar Miller's really been the beneficiary of that. And again, this is kind of the complete opposite nature of their defense. The scheduling of opposing defenses that Deshaun Watson and the Texans offense has faced this year ranks 4th toughest in the NFL. And so, you know, the Colts defense is improving, but this is a drop down in caliber. And it's really tough, I think, for the Colts defense, because while they are trending up a little bit, they've also faced the easiest schedule of opponent offenses. So it's that combined, you know, where the Texans are going down in class and the Colts are going up in class. And again, that's partly why this total is ticking up a bit.
Should be an interesting game. We'll see if the Colts can get back on track or the Texans' juggernaut continues to be a freight train barreling down the tracks towards a playoff berth that seemed improbable if we would have had this discussion in late September amid some of their struggles. To the afternoon slate, and two NFC East rivals will get reacquainted as it's Philadelphia on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys paying a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in the game, 43. Trending towards 43.5. The winner of this game will, of course, hold the division lead entering Week 15. Dallas defeated Philadelphia 27-20 back in Week 10, winning outright as a 7-point dog. But interestingly enough, teams have split their season series in each of the last 5 seasons. And you mentioned the ground game getting going for the Houston Texans. We know the Dallas Cowboys very much the same way. The strength of this football team predicated on running the ball with Ezekiel Elliott and playing defense. I'll ask you this right off the top. Philadelphia defensively, I mean, they were an absolute sieve each of the last 3 weeks. They got healthy because they faced Mark Sanchez. Can the Eagles defense do enough to slow down this new-look Cowboys offense?
It's tough, right? I think we just got done breaking down that Eagles defense on Monday. You nailed it, right? They're the beneficiary of getting to face Mark Sanchez instead of Colt McCoy after a pretty brutal and fluke leg injury there, sliding down, and, I mean, it was just a total fluke. And this is certainly the NFL, right? Like, Philly's defense has been riddled with injuries as well, so they didn't feel bad for Washington. But I think you need to just completely throw that game out, right? Prior to the Washington game, since week 9, that Philadelphia defense allowed 55% of passes to great success. That was the 3rd worst in the NFL over that time frame, and it includes a game against this very Cowboys team. It's not just the secondary that's been bad, right? That front 7, they haven't kept up their end of the bargain either, I don't think. Since week 4, 51% of runs graded successful against Philadelphia. That's bottom 3rd in the league. This is really, to me, a defense just living off reputation at this point, right? 21st in overall defensive efficiency despite facing a schedule that's well below average. And some of those guys are still beat up, right? Hicks, Bradham, those guys are beat up. I think Dallas has some success here offensively. I really do. Their offense is trending up, especially the passing offense, right? And we were kind of critical of Amari Cooper. I think they've put him in some good spots. They're force-feeding him the ball. He's recommitted. He's rebought in. If you look at the season-long metrics, you'll see Dallas, the 6th worst passing offense in terms of success rate. But if you only use the Amari Cooper sample, which is 5 games, over that time, Dallas is 13th in passing success rate offense. So It's huge going from one of like the worst handfuls of passing offenses to an above average passing offense. That's just like this massive improvement. And I'm going to talk about this a lot this time of year because it's all about trending. It's all about what these teams look like now, what they're doing towards the end part of the season. These teams change, right? Week one or week five doesn't really mean as much. You know, certainly, you know, you have to be able to juggle the difficulty and the ease of team schedules, kind of factor that in. But you can just clearly tell there's been this massive improvement through the air for Dallas. And your hope here is Jason Garrett, Scott Linehan don't clam up in the big game because there's going to be ample opportunity here, I think, to make plays through the air against this Eagles secondary.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you always have to try and figure out how to quantify the choke factor, as ridiculous and cliche as it sounds. But Dallas comes off of their biggest win of the season last Thursday night against the Saints. I mean, the defense was outstanding. They held New Orleans to season lows in points, yards, passing yards, and yards per play. But I think some of that burden now flips to the offense because Philadelphia has found something over the last 2 weeks offensively. Carson Wentz's numbers have been good. We know how well he's performed against division opponents during to this point in his career. But they get Golden Tate involved, 7 targets, 7 catches, 85 yards. They have a physical ground game now with Josh Adams, who's given them a little more balance, which wasn't available when they lost at home to Dallas. Can this Dallas defense hold up against Philadelphia's offense, or Payne, are we talking about two teams that may have a little more success going up and down the field than they did at least through the first three quarters of the earlier season meeting?
So here's what's really interesting about this game, right? It's the second time two division opponents are playing in the same season. Historically, games trend a little bit lower in the second meeting, right? This is basically the Super Bowl for both these teams. Familiar opponents, when you look at how these teams basically act throughout the course of the season, they combined for more unders than overs, right? I think they're like 39% combined to the over. So they're two under teams. But I'm kind of hearing you like the over a little bit here. And certainly if both these teams come out aggressive, they're going to have ample opportunities to move the ball here. And you mentioned the ground game for the Eagles improving. It has done that the last few weeks, right? It's partly the offensive line getting healthier. Jason Peters looks like he's going to play this week despite limping off with the ankle injury late in the Washington game. But Josh Adams has helped restore the Eagles' ground game. He is a little beat up. He missed practice on Wednesday. It's a division game. I think he's playing. He's at 170 yards the last two games. The yards per rush don't look great, but Adams has had three explosive runs in the last two games. 50% success rate Monday night, 45% against the Giants. So he's helping provide some balance. We saw Darren Sproles get back involved a little bit offensively as well. You mentioned Golden Tate. This past week was much better. They weren't force-feeding him the ball. Wentz was kind of giving it to him, you know, within the confines of the offense. So I think that helps a little bit too. And let's remember, the offensive production Monday night could have been much better, right? You get stuffed on the fourth and goal run. Wentz throws the pick in the end zone. Wentz misses that layup short pass there to extend the drive deep in plus territory. For me here, I can't see the Eagles having like this massive effort and success against the Cowboys defense running the ball. Certainly, you know, you can use it to remain balanced and create that threat. But I think this is about Carson Wentz, man. Like, he's got to step up. He's got to get back to that MVP level. We've discussed his injury ad nauseum. And Dr. Chow, if you remember when we were talking at the beginning of the year, said, hey, we think Carson Wentz probably is going to be near 100%, you know, towards that week 10 to 12 range. It's now week 14, right? There's not a lot of excuses now. You're going to have to attack Dallas through the air and do it consistently. They've allowed 49% of passes to great successful. You know Wentz wants to locate Ertz early and often. Dallas allows the 6 most receptions to tight ends. I just think this has got to be a Wentz game. The other thing is I thought a lot of people were discussing Sean Lee's return this week. You're going to want to monitor that because he is the best coverage linebacker Dallas has, and he'd be vital guarding Ertz if he can't play. And I think it's trending that way. Didn't practice on Wednesday. I think it's trending where Sean Lee doesn't play. That would be a big loss here. David Irving is another guy to check in on, I think. But this is an interesting game. It looked like a little Philly money came in. You know, it's their season, effectively, and I get that. I don't know how good they are at this point. Certainly a huge game. I think some other injuries to talk about here, Todd. It looks like Tyron Smith is back. I think that's huge.
Yeah, he should be back. At least from what I've read and been told, I expect him to be out there. Now, what capacity, that remains to be seen, but it's a step up when you consider they gave up 11 sacks over the last 2 weeks without him.
Yeah, that's huge, getting him back. And I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, and depending on what side of the game you like, you're going to pitch the spot in the situation, right? If you if you like Philadelphia, you're saying, hey, you know, this is their season right here. You can't lose this one. You're going to reference that stat where, you know, both teams have split the game. You're going to reference, hey, you know, the market's probably a little inflated with Dallas coming off that big national TV win against the Saints. To me, you know, we haven't seen that market inflation. The look ahead line was 3.5. That's where we look now. It's odd not to see that market inflation when you think about America's team just stomping out Drew Brees on national TV. When you look at the like actual spot, it should be Dallas, right? Like they've had like 11 days. They've had 4 extra days to prepare for Philadelphia. You played on Monday night. These guys played on Thursday. And I think, you know, the Zeke factor too, that plays a role. 4 games in 18 days he had where he touched the ball 115 times. I mean, that's a lot of wear and tear. I think that the extra few days for Elliott is huge here. So depending on who you like, you can certainly spin and pitch the spot either way.
Oh, I agree completely. I think this is one of the more fascinating games. Also always interesting when you look at numbers and consider it was a touchdown spread when these two teams met a few weeks ago in Philadelphia. Now you're talking about Dallas, a 4-point favorite at home, and the Cowboys not exactly known for great home field advantage. As far as Zach Ertz, to only further support your point, painting how important he was last time, even in Philadelphia, he's lost 14 catches in the loss to the Cowboys, 145 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. He, of course, on pace to break Jason Witten's record for most catches by a tight end in a season. Should be able to eclipse that mark. I don't think he'll do it this weekend. If he does, it's one hell of a fantasy effort he's going to put forth. Into
that
the Sunday
slot receiver
night,
there who was talking to Josina Anderson, doesn't think it's very efficient football throwing it to Hurts all that much.
Yeah, that slot receiver should go out there and take care of his job is what he should do instead of trying to throw stones when you live in a glass house, but we'll see how things go. I mean, as they talk about interruptions in chemistry or whatever kind of nonsense they were discussing in that regard. Rams and Bears flex to Sunday night football. The Rams, a 3-point road favorite at Soldier Field to take on the Monsters in the Midway. Total in this game, 51 at betonline.ag. We've seen some Bears money enter the market mid speculation and now confirmation that Mitchell Trubisky will be their starting quarterback, barring a setback. We've also seen some under money come in. And I guess first things first, Payne, you and I didn't think there was a big drop-off for Mitchell Trubisky to Chase Daniel, at least initially. I watched last weekend against the Giants, like, maybe there's a little bit more of a drop-off. But how do you see this Bears offense matching up against a Rams defense that looked a hell of a lot better last week with Aqib Talib in the lineup than they did a handful of the weeks preceding it?
So let's talk about that just a little bit. We'll go off on like a little tangent here. What did you see? Because initially, everyone thought there wasn't much of a drop-off, right? And we saw on Thanksgiving, once the market said, hey, Trubisky's out, this went down to 2, and professional bettors said, we just don't value Trubisky that much, and pummeled the Bears, laid the 2 on Thanksgiving, ended up closing basically like 3.25, something along those lines. And the follow-up response in our meetings after that was, Chase Daniels isn't very good. And to me, I didn't watch a lot of the Giants game. You watched more. I thought he did a good job battling back. Obviously the pick 6 was bad. I think, and I pitched this and it may sound weird, but this is strictly just comparing the two quarterbacks. When you look at like the rushing, it's obvious. Like if you line the two guys up, Trubisky and Chase Daniel, like Trubisky is the better runner. I mean, you just look at like the numbers, like Trubisky is going to run for more yards. My point kind of in bucking the idea that Trubisky was light years better, I said, you're going to have to, and I was discussing this with these guys, you're going to have to be able to gauge not the difference in Trubisky's runs, but the difference, you're going to have to throw on the tape, right? You're going to have to go to the All-22 and say, hey, Trubisky's certainly a better runner, but he's a one-read quarterback. So what's the difference when Trubisky pulls it down and runs versus Chase Daniel on the same kind of play where he hits his second or third option, right? Because Chase Daniel isn't going to outrun Trubisky. The comparison would have to be there is Trubisky running when his second, when he doesn't, when his first option isn't there, versus Chase Daniel, what he picks up through the air on his second or third option. And that's the way you would compare it properly. I didn't watch either of the games. How big of a downgrade did you think it was?
You know what? It just felt like the offense never found a rhythm. The Lions game, you saw Chase Daniel start to get some confidence going, and it was primarily throwing to, you know, backs coming out of the backfield. But you look at the performance from Tariq Cohen, he was the most reliable receiver against the Giants. But whether it was the fumbles, whether it was the botched snaps, whether it was being behind the chains and down in distance, I mean, you start to see Jordan Howard get a little bit more involved. But he couldn't extend some of the plays. And while we talk about Trubisky being a one-read quarterback, I mean, his legs will open some things up. He's able to pick up some of those yards. And when we're talking about third and short situations, for me, it didn't feel like the Bears were able to sustain drives the way they needed to. But at the same time, defensively, the Bears were nowhere to be found. I mean, you and I traded texts when that game went to overtime and the Bears were able to get to that point. If you're supposed to be a team that prides itself on having an elite defense, you need to try and get off the field on third downs. You need to bring pressure against Eli Manning, and you can't surrender a field goal in overtime. That's got to be a three and out. Get the ball back to your offense. Hope you get out of Dodge with a win you really didn't deserve.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And maybe I like giving guys too much of a break, right? That first game, I was like, well, Chase Daniel, listen, he had 56 hours. He didn't see live bullets in the game because Trubisky finished that Vikings game on Sunday Night Football. And they didn't really, all they had was walkthroughs all week. So I was trying to give him some, you know, the benefit of the doubt. But I think probably Trubisky's a slight upgrade. And I think the market knew that he was potentially going to play this week. But there wasn't a ton of drastic movement when he was announced. It was three. We're now at soft three. Like, the market still doesn't really fully respect Trubisky. The one thing you mentioned here is the Bears offense, and they did get going a little bit better on the ground, but that's the part to me that's odd. The Bears offense is really struggling with their ground game, and that's one thing I picked up on when I was breaking down this game a little bit and going over some of my notes. The first 7 weeks of the season, this was like this balanced offensive attack that Matt Nagy was running. Third in NFL rushing success rate over that sample, 4.6 yards a carry. They haven't done anything lately. Weeks 8 through 13, the Bears ranked 27th in rushing success rate. They're down a full yard per carry over that time. And you just would have thought, at least in my mind, right, the calendar flips over to the winter months, Jordan Howard's going to just be this massive part of Matt Nagy's offense and game plan. It's been the complete opposite. And as great as Cohen is out of the backfield and creating these mismatches on linebackers and safeties in the pass game, I mean, he's not as successful on the ground. And maybe that's the other thing here. How much is Mitch Trubisky going to run, right? Dr. Chow made it sound like he's got a bruised rotator cuff. That three-week mark is kind of the timeline. You know, I feel like he's pushing that timeline. You would hope maybe he sparks some of that ground game. I just don't know if he's going to be a willing runner on Sunday night. And that's really how you have to beat the Rams, I think, right? They struggle to stop the run. It's something we've talked about a lot with this Rams defense, whether it's guys, you know, just a ton of new guys on that side of the ball, not working in unison, kind of not being, you know, gap sound, not having gap integrity, whatever it is, the Rams defense allows 51% of runs to great successful. You would have never envisioned that when you paired Sue with Aaron Donald up the middle. They've given up 5.1 yards per rush on the season. The last three games, it's gotten even worse, 5.9. So the Bears have to figure out their ground attack here. I know Talib is back for the defense. He played 36% of the snaps against the Lions last week. It doesn't sound like there were any setbacks, but if Chicago can get that ground game going, it should open things up through the air to hit that big play, and we know the Rams are susceptible to that 31st and explosive pass defense. So interesting matchup on that side of the ball.
On the other side of the ball, it's strength on strength with the Rams offense matched up against the Bears defense. And when you look at this Rams team, they're 3-0 against top 10 scoring defenses, averaging almost 35 points per game. This will be the first top 5 defense they faced all season. 10 games this season, Payne, they've scored 30-plus points. It ties them with the 2017 Patriots and 2013 Broncos as the only teams to accomplish that feat. When you look at Jared Goff on the road versus home, passer rating drops from 124.5 down to 92.8. Multiple turnovers in back-to-back games. I'm not ready to hit the panic button by any stretch of the imagination. But what I found fascinating, you dig into some of his primetime numbers, 132 is his passer rating, 14 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Not bad for a kid with California cool, but how does the Bears defense go out there and try and at least neutralize one of the weapons in the Rams offense so it gives them a little bit more predictability and they can scheme for the ways that Sean McVay wants to try and attack you in space?
To me, Goff's production is really determined by trench play, and I think that's going to be the case again Sunday night, right? It's all about that Rams offensive line versus the Bears defensive line. Who wins that battle likely determines the outcome of this game, right? You look just at the pure numbers. Rams are number one in adjusted line yards. They're ninth in adjusted sack rate. The Bears defense, on the other hand, eighth in adjusted line yards, 12th in adjusted sack rate. This is going to be a great matchup. And one thing is evident, I think, for most quarterbacks, except like the very, very elite. But it's crystal clear with Goff at this point in his career. He doesn't like pressure. That's it. That's what this comes down to. That's why we've seen some of those dramatic shifts. Goff has a 65 passer rating under pressure. That is on par with Blake Bortles. It's even worse than guys like Lamar Jackson, Brock Osweiler, and even Eli Manning. And, you know, it's kind of scary.
That's not a company you want to keep in the NFL, last I checked.
No. And what's scary is you can tell, like, he doesn't like pressure. He starts to get happy feet. He drifts in the pocket. It's kind of where that elongated throwing motion people had some concerns about becomes a little bit of a problem. And right now, through 13 weeks, Goff is completing 40% of his passes when he's under pressure. And just kind of for comparison's sake, of the full-time starters who have enough snaps and passes to qualify, Kirk Cousins is number one at 68% completions when under pressure. Even Eli is at 53%. So this is really problematic for the Rams, in my opinion. The positive spin here, as I alluded to before, the Rams' offensive line is so damn good, we don't get to see Goff consistently pressured. He's had the eighth least amount of pressures. When Goff has time and has a clean pocket, he is elite. He's completing 80% of his passes when he's kept clean. He's got a 125 passer rating when there's no pressure. It's just completely night and day. What would make me a little nervous here is what game were we just talking about, Todd?
You're rattled now, and I know why you're rattled as I watch my screen light up like a Christmas tree a few weeks out of the holiday. Talking about the Bears and Rams and Jared Goff, how
tremendous. What game were we just talking about?
Oh, you mean the Eagles and Cowboys game where we said we both leaned over and we're watching the game get absolutely steamed right now as we record?
And I mentioned that last week. All right. Now I'm a little frazzled here. All right. This matchup here is interesting. So, you know, if Goff can have some time, he's going to have success. It's totally, you know, this Bears defense has to get pressure. That's the way they're going to win this game. What does make me a little nervous here is you listen to some of the Rams players, specifically Todd Gurley. He discussed post-game how exhausted he was. They just came off the bye week.
When you slide down, you give up touchdowns, you're going to get exhausted after a little while like Todd Gurley's doing.
It's kind of getting to be that time of year. Right? The Rams just wrapped up the NFC West. It's going to be 27 degrees at kick. There's been some travel element, like 7 out of the last 10 weeks for this Rams team. You know, you could see them potentially lay down in this spot. That's not McVay's personality. But the Chicago Bears have taken real professional money. Now, at this point, right, we don't have 4. We don't have 3.5. It's now a juice 3. I'm not running to bet that, but that's certainly the way the professional money has come in.
Awfully interesting. And keep in mind,
I am totally rattled right now.
The Bears have been good for their backers when playing at Soldier Field. 15-6 against the spread the last 21 at home. They'll enter this game, of course, as a home underdog, barring something unusual transpiring between now and kickoff on Sunday night. We've spoken about 4 of the biggest games for the weekend. We, of course, have Thursday night football left to break down. But before we do that, let's get the sportsbook perspective. He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, we got to kick things off like we do every week around these parts. How did week 13 work out for the good guys behind the counter?
NFL was real good, real strong. It started out great with that Saints-Cowboys game. That was the action on that was through the roof. I mean, this last week, I believe we were talking about how action kind of goes down a little bit this time of year. And I mean, that game was the highest bet regular season game in the history of the company. And it fell our way. We need the Cowboys big, and not only did they cover, but they won outright. And they went outright, just killed teasers, killed money line parlays, etc. So that was the big winner for the house, was the Cowboys. Chargers was real good, and Jaguars as well. The players won on the Patriots, surprise, surprise. Eagles and Rams, but just to put that in comparison of how big that Cowboys game was, the win on the Cowboys was about 7 times greater than our loss in the Patriots, which was the players' biggest win. So that's kind of puts in perspective how big that win was for us.
Always impressive when things kind of break the right way. And before, Payne gets a chance to ask you the obligatory questions about some of the sharp movement and liabilities going into this weekend, wanted to ask you real quickly about college football. And we've seen massive changes in the odds to win the Heisman Trophy. Tua was a big-time favorite for at least the last month of the season. No, you guys opened him earlier this week as a 1-4 favorite, but we've seen a drastic turn of events. Kyler Murray now north of $2 if you want to bet to win the Hardware in Manhattan later this week.
Yeah, the guys kind of were a little open a bad odd, and we got hit right away, but it got corrected. So, so you said it. I mean, a few weeks ago, Tua was minus 1,000 to win the Heisman. It seemed like a no-brainer. And then just last week, Murray takes the lead. He's right now, he's minus 275 to win the Heisman. Tua pays plus 175, and Haskin pulling up the rear at 66-1. We're in the black for all three, so it's as of now, it's a win-win-win. Haskins would be a massive haul, but that's not happening. Murray would be a decent win, and Tua would be a small win. So we'll see how it goes.
That's not a bad way to operate there, winning on all three of those.
Yeah, no, they did. You know, despite their little mess up earlier this week on the odds, they corrected it quick, and we're still, in the black, and then that's a good thing, these futures, because sometimes these futures with those long odds, you can get in the red pretty quick. So they've been doing a real good job at balancing the book on some of these futures lately.
It sounds like it. And when we talk about balancing the book, how are things looking for NFL week 14? Any major liabilities, any sharp money coming in early this week?
Yeah, there is no such thing as a balanced book on the NFL spreads for this weekend. That was not a good segue. So sharp action, let's get to that first. 49ers plus 5.5, that's down to plus 4. Saints under 57, that's down to 55.5. Lions minus 2.5, that's now a field goal. Falcons over 49.5, that's up to 50.5. As far as liabilities, early action, Titans 72% tonight. Chiefs 77%, Texans 80%, Saints 84%, Patriots, shocker again, 74%, Rams 76%. That's also the getting the most bets out of any team, the Rams. Giants 76%, Broncos 91%, Cowboys 69%, and Seahawks 74%.
Have a little bit of action coming in on some road favorites again, Dave. This is a role you guys have grown all too accustomed to this late juncture in the season.
Yeah, man. All those I just rattled off, they're all favorites. A lot of them road favorites, and we'll be rooting for those dogs once again.
I have a feeling you'll be able to get a little buyback on a number of those sides you mentioned there. For all the players, though, looking to get in on some of the action, whether it's to bet this weekend's NFL or take advantage of the earliest NFL openers anywhere online, including a bevy of bowl games that are up on the board as well, what kind of promotions can our Bet the Board listeners expect at the shop?
Right on. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to score 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
You can hear him every single Thursday until they hand out the Lombardi Trophy in early February right here on the Bet the Board podcast. Follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Dave, best of luck this weekend. Look forward to catching up with you same time next week, my friend.
Have a great weekend.
Go figure, Payne. An Island football game, a Sunday night road favorite, the most heavily bet game of the weekend. I have to imagine that if Dave has a Brian Urlacher jersey, Gale Sayers, Walter Payton, Jim McMahon, maybe a headband or two, going to bust all that stuff out in anticipation of, you know, maybe needing a Super Bowl shuffle to get them to the window.
Oh, geez. That will be interesting to see. I don't know if Dave's about that life, but maybe.
Hey, you never know. I mean, I'm not sure if Dave's a guy that's going to have all sorts of voodoo dolls lined up on his desk or anything like that to try and get decisions he needs. Either way, interesting to see all the liability starts to come in early in the week with so many lopsided bet counts, of course, highlighted by the most heavily bet game this Sunday nighter. But all right, to a game that I think the diehard degenerates will watch through maybe one eye closed. I don't even know. Tonight, the Tennessee Titans, a 5.5-point favorite at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Total in the game, 37.5, shaded to the under at betonline.ag. Jaguars' last win against the Titans came in December of 2016. Over the last five games, the Titans have dominated against the spread, 4-1 against the number. Titans also a pretty impressive 14-3 straight-up record when they play in the Music City. Payne, matchup-wise in this football game, I'm not buying Jacksonville's offense. I don't think anybody is. That 6-0 performance against the Colts doesn't leave you brimming with confidence. But the Titans have been vulnerable against opposing ground games, and Leonard Fournette extended rest off of his suspension. How do we see that matchup playing out with Jacksonville's offense against the Titans' defense?
Listen, this is a vastly overrated Titans defense. I think we've outlined that a few times this season. 22nd in both rushing and passing success rate defense. You know, 20th in overall defensive efficiency, despite playing the 7th easiest schedule of offenses. You know, like overall, the Titans did a decent job last week against the Jets, but they had issues stopping the run, as you mentioned. You know, the Jets kind of grinded them out, 4.7 a carry on 33 runs. And, you know, with check down Cody Kessler tonight, it's going to be about Fournette and the Jacksonville offensive line creating opportunities for the offense. If Fournette can get going, that should bode well for the Jacksonville offense. If they don't establish the ground game, I'm not sure what we're going to see, right? That's the concern. What's the next element? I mean, if that ground game gets sniffed out and you would expect Vrabel to dedicate lots of men to the box to stuff that ground game out for Jacksonville, it could get ugly, you know? TJ Yeldon, what's going to be his role here? How efficient and effective is he going to be? Because you notice, check down Kessler, when he's starting, Yeldon becomes the highest targeted receiver for Jacksonville. I just don't know if that's going to be an element where Jacksonville is going to be able to attack, right? The one thing this Titans defense has done really well this year is defend running back passes. And it kind of makes sense, right? You get Vrabel, who's a former linebacker. He knows running back passes can kill a defense. He's rubbed elbows with Belichick, right? He's seen the opportunities Belichick creates with his running backs against defenses. So it seems like Vrabel's defense has kind of concerted this effort here to remove that element from opposing offenses. And you look at some of these numbers through 13 weeks, the Titans have allowed 50 receptions and just 322 total yards against running back passes. That's top 4 in both categories in the NFL. They haven't allowed a receiving touchdown to running backs. They're the only team in the league that can say that. So for me, it's boom or bust. It's one pitch. Can Jacksonville get their ground game going with Fournette? And if they can't, it's ugly, right? It's the pitcher with the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. If it's going and it's a good pitch that night, could have some success. If they're on the 100-mile-an-hour fastball and the secondary stuff isn't working, he's going to get shelled.
Well, there's typically a reason those 100-mile-an-hour fireballers are relegated to single-inning duty because they don't have that arsenal of pitches to mix things up and try and take them deep into the count. When we look at the other side then with the Tennessee Titans offense, and this has been an enigmatic unit for lack of a better term, matched up against a Jacksonville defense that showed some of its teeth last week. We know what they're capable of doing, but the Titans have had the number of this Jags defense, so to speak. Now, they haven't put up gaudy numbers, but they've done enough to get wins. And when I look at the Tennessee Titans, the way they performed, what was surprising to me is how important Marcus Mariota's legs have been against Jacksonville. He has a combined 135 yards rushing in Tennessee's three-game win streak in the series, which included 51 in Week 3's 9-6 victory. He also led the Titans with 43 yards rushing last week against the Jets while throwing for 282. If you're the Titans, how do you go about attacking this Jacksonville defense?
It's tough to do. There's not really a ton of areas that they're overly susceptible. And they showed last week against the Colts, when they're engaged, they're still one of the better defenses in the NFL. And you had Hayden back in the slot. He's been back the last few weeks, and he's really taken that Jaguars defense to the next level, right? They lost Aaron Colvin in free agency, went on to the Texans. And so they missed Hayden the first few weeks. That secondary wasn't as formidable. Now that Hayden's out there, like, it becomes a really good secondary once again. What you like from the Titans offensively is really Mariota. And I think he's taken that next step. Now, the production doesn't look great, right? When you look at the overall offensive performance, they're 28th in rushing success rate offense. They're 23rd in passing success rate offense. It hasn't been very good, but they faced an extremely tough schedule of defenses. They're going to get another one here tonight. It's going to be all about Marcus Mariota finding those quick checkdowns, being efficient in the passing game, using his legs, as you mentioned. And it's usually a defense that you can frustrate them, right? If they can't get to you, and I think that's got to be the key tonight, that Titans offensive line not allowing Mariota to see pressure. If he has some time and you use that quick short passing attack where, you know, the linebackers can't quite get there fast enough and you can extend drives with your legs, you can frustrate the Jacksonville defense. And when they're frustrated, they don't play as well. So I think that's the key. Get the ball out quick tonight. We really need to see some explosiveness from this offense, and it just hasn't been the case. I really think they need another weapon outside. So, you know, to me, this kind of feels like a rock fight tonight.
When we look at the side in total, I mean, numbers, you feel pretty spot on where they need to be, kind of floating in that no man's land as far as the side. And the total, one of the lowest numbers we'll see in this day and age in the NFL, under the key of 38.
Yeah, I think that's you know, it becomes extremely difficult to navigate. And, you know, the public is certainly on Tennessee, as Dave Mason alluded to. I saw a slight touch at 4. It was extremely small, right? Tennessee's playoff hope still on the line. So you're getting a little inflation with that. But again, for me, it's about having multiple options. And that's the scary part, right? What does Jacksonville do if they can't run? That's what makes me nervous, backing them potentially in this spot. It'll be interesting to see how high this number gets. I think if it continues to tick up, maybe you see an appetite at 6, that secondary key number. But we're kind of in the dead zone now at 5. So I don't know how much movement we'll continue to see. At 37, 37.5, it becomes a much tougher number to navigate. It kind of wipes out potentially that first half angle, because effectively you're looking at 17.5, right? There's a lot of just dead number noise there. In some of those other numbers, you know, that once you get from 17.5, it's effectively the same. You know, you're looking for 20. 20 becomes that next key number within the first half total. So I just don't see a ton of opportunity on this game. I was hoping to get out of the house tonight. I screwed up my schedule, by the way. I thought the Mule was coming out this week, and my brain
December
just
14th.
Kind of, yeah, discombobulated December 4th and December 14th. So I had really planned to get out and watch the Mule, and then I find out I'm a week early on that, so I might be forced to watching this game tonight.
I mean, you can always call an audible. There's got to be something else out there you can go check out. Maybe it's a perfect time to check out a sitcom that you have missed, like The Office or something along those lines, if you want to get in like 6 seasons.
I hear it's like 20 minutes without commercials. You might be able to get in 6 seasons in one night.
You know what? It is perfect for a binge-worthy Thursday night, even if this football game doesn't bear watching. But we know folks will have their eyes glued to it as an island football game, as they so often do. Not exactly massive fantasy implications, as a lot of people, I'm sure, will enter their playoffs, hopefully with a chance to win their respective leagues. But, yeah, I don't see much either in this particular game. However, Payne, you know, we have one last final order of business before we close up shop on this fine Thursday morning. Where are we going for the best investment of the weekend?
Now, this number's gotten away a little bit, but I still do think at this point there's enough value in it to play it. We like San Francisco plus the points. It's 4, 4.5 out there. Obviously, shop around. Get the 4.5 if you can, but we like San Francisco. Bottom line, this game comes down to not turning the ball over. That's the reality of the situation. If San Francisco doesn't turn it over, they're probably going to win this game outright. And you just look at some of, you know, the discrepancies in numbers. San Francisco's actually outgained their opponents this season. Outgained their opponents. And they're 2-10, and it's because they're turning the ball over. Prevent the turnovers, hold on to the ball, cherish it, and you can win this game outright. I think this is a tough spot for Denver, too. You got a little market inflation, right, for the must-win playoff stuff, but two key cogs on both sides of the ball are out now. I think Chris Harris is going to be really missed in a secondary that hasn't performed overly well this season. So without your top guy, I think San Francisco can do some things in the pass game, and they get Goodwin back, Marquise Goodwin. He is a legitimate threat, provides space for that offense. So I like San Francisco this week. I think on the other side of the ball, Emmanuel Sanders. I think that's a difficult loss to absorb as well on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and I'm not sure Cortland Sutton is ready to step into being the number one wide receiver, getting all the attention of the likes of Richard Sherman and company. We've seen the Denver Broncos have success running the ball. San Francisco's done a halfway decent job in that regard. Hopefully they can put together a complete half of football. And the turnover gods smile fondly upon us. And Payne, I have to give you one piece of non-football related news since we talked about this individual and where he would sign as a free agent in Major League Baseball. It appears Nathan Eovaldi back with the Boston Red Sox, 4 years, $67.5 million, so he can haunt our Yankees for yet another season of American League East Baseball.
The Yankee stopper. Literally, he just pitches Yankee games and then comes out of the bullpen in the playoffs. You know, when you got that much money to throw around. I thought the Yankees would go a little defense there, right? Just sign him so you don't have to play against him.
Yeah, you think they would think outside the box, but I don't want to get too lost in the weeds with some of the baseball chatter. The 49ers.
So this means Ian Happ is next.
I don't want Ian Happ. I'd have J.A. Happ.
Yeah.
In our starting rotation. If we have to go to Ian Happ, it might be a long season coming out of that fourth or fifth slot.
We need J.A. Happ at this point.
we'll get you five a pop. But the 49ers, your best bet from the lovely folks here at Bet the Board. So let's try and get to the window there. Out in the Bay Area, hopefully outright against the Denver Broncos. Any final words of wisdom, life advice, homeopathic remedies to try and cure a cold and flu? Anything that you want to share with our listeners?
No, I'm just really concerned about this pitching staff now for the Yankees. We got to get J.A. Happ at this point. Like, who else
Hopefully 3 years, $50 million to throw out there to the lefty. We'll see what
we got. How did we not get Corbin? Like, go spend some freaking money, man. God, is that annoying.
Hey. All right. Nats a little bit deeper pockets if they're not going to bring back B. Harp into their offensive fold. Still can't wait to see where he ultimately signs as well. But special thanks to Dave Mason, who joins us every Thursday to talk about the sportsbook perspective and their needs for the house. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne on Twitter as well at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Best of luck this weekend with all of your NFL Week 14 selections. And come Sunday afternoon, with a 49ers ticket in your hand, we'll see you at the window.